This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Earlier this week, the founder and owner of Patagonia, Yvon Chouinard, you know, that company known for their famous puffer jackets and outdoor gear. Well, he gave away the whole company. Who did he give it to? Well, the Earth, so to speak. Here to tell us more about this surprising news and other science stories of the week is Perbita Saha, deputy editor of Popular Science based in New York. Welcome back to Science Friday.
Hi, good, beautiful afternoon, everyone.
So the founder of Patagonia gives away his entire company, right? Valued at $3 billion. Where did the money go?
Yeah, this is a pretty special case. Unlike other business owners or philanthropists, Yvon Chouinard didn't just donate all his money. He actually took his family's shares in the company and divided it among two organizations. A smaller slice is going to the Patagonia Purpose Trust, which is going to advise decisions on how the company's profits are spent, again, for the greater good of the earth. And then the lion's share is going to a new nonprofit called the Holdfast Collective. This nonprofit, like I said, is extremely new, but the purpose is supposed to be to protect land and natural resources.
And so how is this different from how other billionaires donate their wealth?
Billionaires and millionaires, they will do their annual donations sometimes, whether it be to a nonprofit or to a university or even to a trust, but they'll do a lump sum at a time. The way that Yvon Chouinard is giving away his entire company rather than selling it to another business owner and taking a bit of the profits and donating that toward a climate change initiative. This is just pretty unprecedented. There have been other business owners who've given away their companies to philanthropic organizations, but the way he's doing it specifically for environmental action, a lot of experts are saying that's just completely new.
Amazing. That is some nice climate crisis leadership. Let's move on to health news. COVID boosters and flu shots are rolling out again. It's that season. Perbita, is it okay to get both shots at the same time? I was wondering that as I sat getting my booster.
Yes, it is. This has been a burning question, both in my personal circles and in the medical community. A lot of infectious disease experts and even the CDC itself have said it's totally safe to get both at the same time. This is particularly relevant right now with the new Omicron-specific boosters that have just become available and us going into flu season. You don't have to get them both at the same time. The best time to actually get the flu shot or the nasal spray would probably be in October because peak flu season is between December and February. So if you get it next month, your immune system will really be primed to when the virus hits hard.
We know this is the new bivalent COVID vaccine, but is there anything new about this flu vaccine?
The flu vaccine gets updated every year. The World Health Organization meets in February to decide what the dominant flu strains are going to be for the upcoming season. And when they decide that, and it's usually different geographically, they make recommendations for how the vaccine should be customized to best protect us.
There's talk about the COVID booster being distributed similarly to the flu vaccine, like once a year. What's new there? Can we expect that to happen?
That seems to still be the prevalent thinking. Anthony Fauci and several other government health experts have said, as long as COVID keeps evolving, this is probably going to be the trend. Gregory Poland from the Mayo Clinic told CNN's Brenda Goodman, our great-great-grandchildren will be getting coronavirus vaccines. So it really is in the same pattern of the flu vaccine as we see it right now.
Interesting. There's also news on the cancer front, right? A blood test that could help catch cancer earlier. This really sounds promising. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so there are a few of these tests in the works, but this is one of the largest scale studies on the results of these tests that we've seen so far. This test is called Galleri, and it's made by the biotech company Grail. It sounds pretty simple. It takes a blood sample and it looks for biological imprints of cancer activity. And one of the biggest clues is little snippets of DNA that have been mutated or taken over by cancer. The company says that it can detect more than 50 different types of cancer.
Wow.
This first study was able to detect 36 different kinds. And some of those are as dire as ovarian and pancreatic cancer, and some are also more blood specific.
And so, of course, we always want to know what are the next steps for this blood test. How soon should we expect to see it in our hospitals or pharmacies?
Yeah, so this first round of results was pretty beefy. They tested it on more than 6,000 people. Out of that pool, 1% of people had early signs of cancer. Out of that 1%, 38% did actually have some different forms of cancer. The other strong finding with this test was that out of the 99% who didn't have cancer, that accuracy level was very, very high. We're hoping to not see false positives out of this test. But this is still very much in the testing phase across multiple hospitals and institutions in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah. And our next story takes us into orbit. This is to the International Space Station, where astronauts took photos of Earth at night, not just because they're pretty pictures, but they were doing it for science. Tell us about that, please.
Yeah, so being on the International Space Station must be so fun. I mean, I know it's hard. I know there's a lot of work that goes into it. At least for the past few years, the astronauts and cosmonauts on there have been taking daily pictures of Earth. So these photos provide ample data for other scientists down here on Earth. And one pretty unique study that just came out, some scientists looked at the photos taken from the ISS between 2012 and 2013, and then 2014 and 2020. And they were specifically looking at the shift in visible light over the European continent. They wanted to track how the trend from incandescent bulbs to LED lights, how that was having a larger effect over the environment and how visible that was, not just here on Earth, but from space. To our eyes, it looks like yellow light from the incandescent bulbs and white light from the LED lights. But in scientific terms, it's called blue light.
Yeah, yeah. And we all know that blue light is not so great for our sleep and our eyesight and stuff like that.
Yeah, there are some major concerns that this can disrupt our sleep patterns. Blue light might trick our brains into thinking that it's still day outside, and that in turn would stop the production of melanin, which is what makes us sleepy. There isn't a lot of strong evidence on whether this is really a health concern. Most of it's anecdotal, but it is something that's talked about a lot, especially with things like phone and laptop screens.
Now, let's move into some more exciting space news. We have a very cool experiment to look forward to in space, the DART mission. And this is crashing a spacecraft into an asteroid. Wow. Sounds like something out of a movie, Perbita.
I think it kind of is. I mean, I know it's a little corny at this point, but if you've seen the movie Look Up, this is exactly what we need to get ahead of problems like asteroids crashing into Earth. But yeah, this is what NASA says is the world's first space defense test system. And essentially, it's just a little spacecraft that was sent up into the solar system back in November. It's on track to hit a small asteroid called Dimorphos just later this month. It's happening. It's happening soon.
Wow. The idea is to knock it off its present orbit to see if we can influence any asteroid in the future that might be heading our way?
Yes, exactly. So this is all going to help us understand what kind of physics would go into a collision like this, how much force we need to hit an asteroid with, what can actually be effective. So DART is really going to be all comprehensive and trying to get a basic understanding of what happens when, I like to say, you punch an asteroid.
Well, let's hope it doesn't turn into that movie, because there's really not much chance of that happening, right?
Not really. We have constant eyes on the skies and are always tracking different meteors. Anytime there's even a bit of space debris headed toward Earth, again, there are multiple satellites and cameras checking on its trajectory, like minute by minute.
Right. All right. Final story, and a really interesting one. I understand there's a battle raging in Australia between humans and fierce contenders, the sulfur-crested cockatoos. What are they fighting about?
Oh my God, I love these birds. There are people living in the suburbs of Sydney who the cockatoos are just a pest to them because they'll put their trash out on the curb, and the cockatoos have figured out a way or multiple ways to lift the lids up and get into the trash, both to pillage it for food, but also they seem to just be nefarious and wanting to just leave trash all over the yard and the streets and such. So it's become a real nuisance. And this has all happened just in the past few years. The cockatoos have picked up the skill and kept adapting it and even teaching it to others in their little flocks.
Wow, that sounds like the raccoons in my yard. So this is interesting from the fact that this is a new thing and they teach it to one another.
Yes, exactly. And the authors of the study have even called it an arms race between different species. So the residents of these areas around Sydney have tried different ways to throw the cockatoos off the trash. So they've weighed the lids down with rocks and water bottles and even put little locks on them. And the cockatoos figure it out. And once they see one cockatoo get through, the others will learn and pick it up.
Well, my money's on the cockatoos.
Same here. As long as the bears around me don't get as smart, I'm happy to watch from afar.
Yes, I agree. Thank you, Prabita, for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you. Had a lot of fun.
Prabita Saha is the deputy editor of Popular Science based in New York.